Tubby Geis was put on a diet at the age of 9. And from that moment, she tried to prove she was worthy and lovable by not eating. She ended up developing dangerous eating habits at age 12, which continued for over 20 years. Food became her source of pain and comfort. Can you relate? She eventually began a personal development journey to uncover the layers hiding the real Toby, the little girl who never felt loved. Hi, I'm Rosie Aiello, and welcome to the Vulnerable to Valuable podcast. We talk about moving forward after experiencing narcissistic, controlling, demeaning, and abusive relationships. If you've been in one of those, like me, you know what I'm talking about. You're not alone. You've been through some painful stuff. Shame, blame, that inner bully inside you. My mission is to lift and inspire you. Give you the ways you can reclaim your voice and value, your confidence, and the courage to be the new empowered you and create your path to find the kind love of your life. Today, coming up in the podcast, our guest, Tubby Geis, shares her journey of feeling unlovable and unworthy and how she used her body and food to fill that void. You'll love Toby's authenticity and her path to reclaim herself. We're going to talk with Toby in a moment, and first, a mini masterclass. Today's mini masterclass is pulled from the Freedom Fulfillment Pillar number 3 on values, what's important to you. And as we grow up and experience the world, we're influenced by many people in our lives, our parents, our other family members, society, religion, school, the news. I mean, the list goes on. And, you know, we start to realize that the world is just not full of peaches and cream. You know, sometimes we're happy, we're sad, we're joyful, we're fearful, we're excited, we're depressed. And we just, as human beings, we experience a whole range of feelings and emotions. But most of us don't really know how to feel our feelings. Now, this may seem like a strange concept. You may be thinking, what do you mean feel my feelings? Of course I feel my feelings. I'm angry when someone insults me or belittles me or yells at me or whatever, right? But that's not actually feeling the feeling. So just stick with me here. This is going to be so impactful to you when you learn this. So let me ask you, let's just take the angry example. When you're angry, what do? Do you scream and yell back? Do you pout, leave the room, slam the door to your bedroom? Do you sit in front of your TV or electronic device, watching movies mindlessly? Do you pull out a carton of ice cream and sit cross-legged and just dig in while watching maybe the movie? Or maybe you open a bag of chips or cookies or candy. Or maybe it's a bottle of wine. You're not alone. If you do one of these things I mentioned or something similar, you're acting out your feelings. You're not actually feeling them. You're acting them out. I can't count the number of times I would just mindlessly eat, right? I remember snacking and saying to myself that I didn't even like the snack. I couldn't stop it. Do you ever get like that too? We do these things to avoid feeling our feelings. We'd rather do something like eat or drink something to avoid the momentary discomfort of experiencing the feeling we are having. So you're probably like, okay, Rosie, what do we do here? Like, so how do you feel your feelings? Okay, I'm gonna tell you. Listen up. Sit comfortably somewhere where you know, it could be the sofa, a favorite chair, on your bed, doesn't matter, on the floor. And if you can identify the feeling you're experiencing, go ahead and name it. A lot of times we can't even name the feeling, but you can just try something simple. I'm angry, I'm sad, I'm disappointed. I mean, let's just stick with the angry example. So if you feel angry, or when you feel angry, where in your body do you feel it? Your throat? Does like your throat get tight? Your neck, maybe your stomach starts to get a little upset. Maybe your back gets tight. And then just like, is that feeling, is it big or small? Is it, what shape does it have? Is it moving? Is it pulsating? You know, just start to really pull your attention towards that. And you can tell yourself that you're angry. It's okay. Listen, all feelings are okay. It's part of the whole human experience. We have all these feelings. It makes us who we are as a human being. Now, how we behave is a different story. I'm not going to go into that part. I want you to just sit there with the discomfort of the feeling of anger. You just like, it's like you're just, oh, it just feels horrible. I just can't stand this. I'm so angry. And you may start to feel the urge to get up and eat or drink or distract yourself somehow, right? Just notice that. Just notice that urge. That's just the old habit of ignoring the feeling. But when you notice it, do that without judgment. You're already feeling bad, right? Then you don't need to put on top of it being bad about feeling bad because you didn't do it right or whatever, okay? But listen, the more attention you put on experiencing the feeling instead of ignoring its existence or pushing it down or pretending it doesn't exist, the sooner the discomfort of the feeling is going to pass. And you're going to realize that the feeling is going to dissipate, like sometimes it dissipates in 2 minutes. Sometimes it may take 10 minutes, maybe sometimes longer. But just think about this. We do all that commotion to avoid, let's say, 10 minutes of feeling discomfort in our body. We eat, we drink, we slam, we go watch these movies because we don't want to feel the discomfort. This is one of the most important skills that you can learn. And as you learn to honor and value yourself, you're going to learn to honor and value your feelings. I'm not going to lie, this process takes practice. So be kind and gentle as you're learning and as you're practicing. But this one is one of the most important keys to empowering yourself and leading your own life. You've got this. You definitely have got this. And if it's a little confusing, don't worry about it. Just re-listen to this and just keep trying. The only way to move forward and create an impact in your life is to know where you're at, where you want to go, and what's holding you back. Get started by taking the Freedom Fulfillment Quiz. In 4 short minutes, you'll discover where you are, where you want to be, and what you'll need to do. If you're serious about evolving into a new empowered you who can show up as that confident woman she once was or wants to be, then start now. Your life is waiting for you. Go to freedomfulfillmentquiz.com. A certified integrative NLP coach, Toby Geis is passionate about empowering others to find their own healing within so that they can love their bodies, their life, and their future. Now, let's go from vulnerable to valuable with Toby Geis. Welcome, Toby. How are you today?
I'm good, Rosie. Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
I'm great. I am so looking forward to this. You are just so awesome. And I just want to share with our listener a little bit about you. And I just loved what you shared. Toby Geis is a lifelong student, always seeking and evolving. Now, isn't that a great way to start things? I just loved it because it's like, if everybody in the world could just be that way and just be an open learning book and know that we're evolving. She began her personal growth path in 2004, diving deep into self-awareness and transformational work. Her growth path led her to spirituality, where she overcame a painful addiction and turned her attention to healing her mind, body, and soul. A certified integrative NLP coach, a neuro-linguistic programming coach, master practitioner of hypnotherapy and mental and emotional release, Reiki master and breathwork practitioner. Toby is passionate about empowering others to find their own healing within. I love that. It's giving me goosebumps reading your bio.
It's giving me goosebumps the way you're reading it.
The love. It's just so, so wonderful. And if you're just listening to the audio, you can't see this gleaming face that's in front of me, but I get to see it just to envision that. But you weren't always in this gleaming situation. You start out having some experiences that really weren't all that great for, especially from a young child's point of view. So if you can just give a little background for our listener to see where you came from and what you were experiencing.
Yeah, thank you. Well, first of all, thank you so much for that glorious intro. And you are just so full of love, Rosie. It's just emanating from you. So what you're getting from me, I'm getting from you. And there's this beautiful interchange. So thank you. Thank you. So my childhood, you know, I just want to start out with, I know my parents did the best that they could. And that is not a cliche to say, is that they really did the best that they could with the tools that they had. So anything I say is not meant to defame or deface my parents, my mother specifically. And I recognize now that she is still in a lot of pain. And at the time, I didn't know that. So when I was 9 years old, I was put on my first diet at the doctor. The doctor said I was overweight. And I remember specifically, I weighed 70 pounds. I still don't even have a sense right now if that's fat for a nine-year-old, but I don't think so.
Doesn't sound like it. 70 pounds doesn't sound fat, but
I don't know. This doctor had a big old belly and he told me that I was fat and I needed to lose weight. And so my mom, it was permission for her to start. Okay. So from a 9 year old perspective, it was her permission to start being mean to me about my body. From an adult perspective, it was her permission to start projecting her own self-loathing onto me. And that really began my life as it is now. And my mom, I know she tried really hard, but she was just full of anger and hurt. And she said some really mean things to me. And from the time that I was put on a diet when I was 9, I wasn't allowed to eat what everybody else at the family at the dinner table could eat. And I didn't understand. She didn't teach me about nutrition or about health, healthy foods. It was just, no, you can't have that. And I used to always have seconds. And I wasn't allowed to have seconds anymore. And I didn't understand. So that evolved over time. And I would cry at the dinner table. Our family eventually separated from the dinner table. And then everybody would go to different televisions in the house and eat alone is how, how that evolved in the family.
Oh, so before, how many siblings do you have?
Two. There's five of us.
Five of you. But you were the only one at the table who had a restriction. Were you the older one of the
middle?
You're the middle. Okay.
Yeah.
So you were the middle one and the doctor told you, you needed to go on your diet. Maybe your mother, do you know if your mother took you to the doctor for that purpose, for that reason?
No, it was just a standard checkup as far as I can remember.
Okay. Well, you were a child, so it's hard to know.
I don't really know. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to know. But then, so you were all eating at the table together where you had these restrictions, but then later on, everyone stopped eating together as a family and they all ate separately in front of the television or wherever they wanted to do. So there wasn't any. Did you feel like?
I felt like dinner was a punishment.
Dinner was a punishment. Sure.
I didn't recognize at the time that when everybody's, you know, the format of dinner changed, I didn't recognize that at the time. It's in reflection looking back. And I think it's probably because I would cry at the dinner table. My parents didn't know how to deal with it. My mom is an amazing cook and she's been heralded, you know, amongst family and friends, and she would always host Christmas dinner and Thanksgiving, and everybody loves my mom's food. I was on Nutrisystem. You know Nutrisystem? Yes. It's like the astronaut food. It's like dehydrated and you pour it into boiling water. Mm-hmm. That's what I had to eat when everybody else got to eat my mom's food. And I didn't get it. I didn't understand. I was a child. It wasn't explained to me. And then we would go to the pool. And I would be on SlimFast. I remember in fourth grade, it was delicious. It was chocolate milk, but I wasn't allowed to have anything else. And I didn't understand. Everybody else is eating chips and peanut butter and jelly and hanging out. And all of a sudden I feel uncomfortable in my bathing suit. Even at that young age of 9 and 10 years old, like I was already self-conscious about my body because it was communicated to me at home. And when I started to get older, my mom would say things to me like, if you eat that, it's going to go right to your hips. She was watching everything that I ate. So I would eventually hide and eat and not eat in front of my mom. And I interpreted all these things to mean that I wasn't loved and that the only way to get love from my mom was to be thin. And throughout my life, I could never lose weight. It just never really worked for me. And I did everything.
Now, at school, were you teased about your weight?
I was. I don't remember it excessively, but I remember in elementary school being called Thunder Thighs, Toby the Tuba, which was actually a cartoon, unfortunately for me.
Oh, okay.
It was an older cartoon. I don't know, from like the 70s probably, but Toby the Tuba. Those are the two main ones that I remember being called at school and by my brother. And I always had chubby thighs, still do. It's just part of my makeup, part of my body shape.
Yeah. Okay. It's just interesting to see because children, they can be really mean, right?
Absolutely.
And so if you have that on top of what's going on at home, was your mother, I'm just curious, was your mother, did she have normal body weight?
Or yeah, like 120 pounds, 125, always, still.
Right.
So, tiny frame.
Yeah. So now you're hearing all this, you're not loved. So what became the impact in the closet? You hid?
In hiding. So basically after everybody would go to bed.
Okay, right. Especially when your mother, you know, she had great cooking. It's like, what was going on?
My house was stocked with chips and we had these individual size frozen pizzas and we had drumsticks and all these different kinds of ice cream, like tons of junk food in the house. This is my mom's sweet tooth. My mom loves to snack. Anyway, I wasn't allowed to touch any of that stuff. So when I would eat a very small portion at dinner, if I even ate it all, because I'd show my mom, see, mom, I'm lovable. I'm not eating. I'm losing weight. And then when everybody would go to bed, I would pig out. And if I woke up in the morning, if I had fallen asleep on the couch watching TV and woken up with plates around me and crumbs on my chest, my mom would come down, you know, to get ready for work and find me there, I would be mortified. I was filled with so much shame. Like, oh my God, I was caught. And when I was 12, I developed bulimia. Sometimes I say I discovered bulimia because it felt like the Holy Grail. A friend taught me, she was staying overnight, and she taught me how to stick my finger down my throat. Bulimia is considered a disease or an addiction. And it's like the opposite of anorexia, but they're really in the same camp. Whereas anorexia is starving yourself, not eating. Bulimia is binging. So eating, you know, a ton until my stomach feels like it's going to burst and then I throw it all up. And I thought it was the Holy Grail. Like, oh God, I can eat whatever I want. I can have all these treats. I don't have to gain weight from it, which never really worked because my body was inflamed, you know, from all the acidity that creates. But I started binging and purging at 12. And that went on for a big chunk of my life until I was 35.
Wow. That was a long time.
Yeah.
What was the turning point for you when you realized that's not the way you wanted to live your life? Or what was it that made you switch and to start to open up to finding the true Toby?
Well, interestingly enough, it took me quite a while to get there because I was in denial, which is a very learned trait in my family. It has to get to a really bad place before they will look at it. Kind of like how instead of dealing with me and my feelings at the dinner table, everybody just separated and went to different tables. I had that same trait. I was doing, as you read in my bio, in 2004, I started personal growth work. And I think I was 26 at the time. And I had been involved in this organization, working on myself, peeling back the layers, you know, working on my dark side, you know, so I thought, but I did not know that I had a problem. I was in such denial. I had been doing my work for almost a decade before it really got to a point where I really faced it because it wasn't always. It was when I was on a specific diet or I used to do a lot of endurance exercise. So I used to do running races and then I got into triathlons and century bike rides. Wow. And I always had this, and there's a thing called exercise bulimia, by the way. Mm-hmm. And I would work out twice a day. when I was training for the half Ironman, and it was nuts. So I was training for a half Ironman. I was working out. I'd get up at 5 a.m. and go to the gym, swim practice. And then I would work this really stressful job in event planning with an alcoholic boss. And then I would work really late at night. And then I would binge throughout my day and purge while I was at work. And then I would come home and I would work out again. And you know, the body cannot sustain that level of stress. So I hit a bottom. And I remember I was in my personal growth group, and we always started out with everybody checked in with where they were at. And it was one of those divine intervention moments where I had no idea it was going to come out of my mouth. And it was my turn to check in. And I opened my mouth and I said, I'm binging and purging, and I don't know how to stop. I need help. Mm. And I remember going like, who just said that? Like, I didn't say that.
I know what you mean, though. It was like an out-of-body experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Because part of the addiction, the disease, however you want to frame it, is hiding. I had built this whole persona as an athlete, and that I thought that if people saw me as an athlete, then they wouldn't see my fat. So I was living a lie. Even though I was doing all this personal growth work, there was this huge blind spot that was terrifying for me to look at, because if I had a problem, if I was a bulimic, then what did that mean about me? I was an overachiever. Mm-hmm. And actually, bulimia happens a lot with overachievers. It's somehow it tends to go hand in hand. So I was in my group and I said the thing, and my group leader said to me, wow, okay, well, we're an educational organization. You need to see a therapist, which was meant to be helpful. But at the same time, I heard, wow, you're messed up. Because that's just how I filtered it.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, how people, she didn't acknowledge like, okay, thank you for sharing. You know, let's see how we can support you. It was like, can't deal with it. So it was another way that I'm not lovable because I'm not good enough to be in this group. So shove me off again. I don't know. Was that it? Because that's what kind of, I'm seeing a little pattern here.
I never recognized that. Wow. I mean, I stayed in the group. I was still involved for another 2 years or so, but yeah, I definitely felt like, what do you mean you can't deal with that here? But they had an identity as an educational organization, and they don't deal with things like addiction or those kind of issues. So, but thankfully I went to see a therapist who knew, really, really understood me and was involved in Overeaters Anonymous herself and had been bulimic and recovered. And, you know, she talked to me. It took a couple months to get me to go to OA, which is a 12-step group based on AA. Mm-hmm. And I had this thing that, oh, only morbidly obese people go to OA, Overeaters Anonymous. I don't even know where I got that idea. But again, it was just in such conflict with my identity.
Yeah, because you're an athlete, right? Exactly. Athletes are not fat.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So she worked on me for a couple months and finally got me to go to a meeting. And my first meeting, I sobbed the entire time because everybody who shared, I could identify with their story. And I was like, oh my God, this is me. It was terrifying to me. Oh my God, this is me. And that was in Chicago. And then I didn't go to another meeting for a little bit because I, again, divine intervention, spirit's really on my side, plucked me out of this toxic life I was living in Chicago and brought me to San Diego to heal. I'm clear that that's exactly what happened. And I was in here in San Diego on vacation, and I was actually training for the LA Marathon, go figure, which is why I came out here. And I was staying with a friend in LA, and then I came down to San Diego to visit some other friends. Never ended up doing the race, by the way, because I got into therapy at the time. And I was like, okay, let's just not do that. And I had 3 spontaneous job interviews while I was here. And this company hired me, and they've never moved anybody. It was a small company. They've never moved anybody from another state. And they moved me across country. They paid for my move and brought me to San Diego. It was truly divine intervention because I don't think I could have healed in Chicago. There was too much of that when I'd run into people on the street, like, what race are you training for? Like, there was just too much of the old construct for me to be able to really shift and change my life in the way that I needed to. I needed to do a total 180. And I did. I did. I mean, it took a number of years.
I love that because it's interesting how people have what is leading them to evolve and to change. You know, you're beginning, you're seeking, always seeking and evolving. And I think it just shows that sometimes it comes from within. Sometimes it comes from some, like you said, a divine intervention. Something is coming and just like what came out of your mouth, right? That was the first one. So in a way, to me, that was almost like divine intervention. It's like, okay, she's not saying that I'm gonna help her along here. I'm gonna put it in. But that was, and even that person who was leading the group, while they may have been able to show a little bit more compassion, they knew it was outside of their realm of being able to help you. So that was still a good move, but it could have been maybe done a little bit softer too.
Absolutely. It could have been done softer. That organization was not known for its softness.
So, but that all these little things kept pushing you. I kept pushing you and guiding you and going out for, oh, I'm still an athlete to the marathon to work out or to go to the marathon in LA. And then this tumble of things that just pushed you. And it's like, yeah, this feels right. And you saw somebody. So it's all these steps. I'm saying this because I want the listener to hear that recovery and shifting is not a straight line. It's not one thing. It's multiple things. But I think what's important here is to start being open to hearing the messages that maybe you're not getting, or trying to figure things out that maybe the messages are coming, but we're not hearing them.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's something to be really open about. And you were being guided, not even knowing at the time how much you were being guided. And I think that's a good point too, because I was being guided many times too. And I didn't realize that till much later that, oh, that's what was happening. That's what was helping me move forward.
Yes.
So thank you for sharing that. So then you have the therapist who introduced to you OA or Overeaters Anonymous. And you started to see that so many of the things they were saying in that group, you could tap into. And your perception of what a person who is in Overeaters Anonymous was completely different from the reality of it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
They were probably other athletes like you and people. I mean, I know some people who are experienced bulimia and anorexia. So I understand that. What was probably, you know, one of the things that really helped you, now you're in that group, you're in therapy, that you learned about yourself? I mean, did you like learning the truth of who you are, owning your own truth?
So much, so much. I'd say one of the biggest ones is that I am a spiritual person. Not only that, I mean, now I'm an energy healer and spirituality is like my guiding light. But when I got into OA, I had this reaction to the word God, because I was raised Catholic and I knew I was spiritual, but I didn't know how to define it. And I was kind of resistant to exploring that. And I'm like, oh, I'll get to it eventually. But then I stepped into OA and I saw the word God in almost every single one of the 12 steps. And I was like, well, I better get on board, because if I'm going to heal, I better get on board with this. And really it was like a decision like that. And everything changed. That was a huge realization, and about myself, but also about the nature of spirituality and reality, that like I made a decision and everything changed. Like I opened myself to the experience and then I was able to start healing. But like when I was closed off to it and I was in denial, like you can't change. Awareness is the first step to change. And my first year in OA was a lot of awareness and working through the steps. And I did have a hard time with, you know, some of the things there about, you know, step one, that you're powerless, being powerless over food, and, you know, having to call myself, hi, my name is Toby. I'm a compulsive overeater. That took me a long time. It took me probably a year and a half to even call myself a bulimic. I couldn't even say it. I could not say bulimia and Toby in the same sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a lot of like breaking down of my ego, because it was so getting in the way.
I see.
Mm-hmm. So much about my identity I had to release in order to find my healing, because this identity I had created, which was You know, our personality is made up of a bunch of beliefs and ideas and habits that we call our personality, that we call ourselves. And it's like, that's not the true us. That's not the true essence of us. We're so much more expansive than that. And I was getting a taste of that in OA. And now OA was not the end all be all for me, because there was a point where I was in for like four and a half years. And I was like, what is going on? It's just still not working for me. Like, I had an immense amount of healing and realization and opened myself immensely. And I had control over the food because I didn't eat flour or sugar for 5 years. I did not touch it. No sugar in the top five ingredients, no types of flour, no, not even rice flour, almond flour, none of that. I wouldn't go near it. Anything that looked like a dessert, I wouldn't go near it. Even if it was made with like dates or something like that, wouldn't go near it. That's not living. That's not freedom. But it worked for me at the time. And I needed to be able to separate myself from that so that I could change my relationship with food. So that was under control. But then when I would look in the mirror, I would still just hate myself. And I'd have these downward spirals around my body image. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know what to do. I have a sponsor. I am a sponsor. I'm doing my step work repeatedly, consistently. You know, I'm reading books, I'm listening to podcasts, I'm praying, I'm surrendering, I'm meditating. I don't know what else to do. What is the answer? And then at that point, I was introduced to plant medicine. And I had a spiritual experience on plant medicine. And I had an exorcism of my eating disorder. Because again, I got to another bottom almost. It was a much higher bottom. Yeah. But it was a place where I was like, what? I don't know what else to do. Please help me. And then spirit stepped in. And again, it was another divine intervention moment where I met somebody. I was on my corporate job and my event producer walks up to me and then we start having this deep spiritual conversation. And, you know, he introduces me to it and invites me in. And yeah, and it was an amazing experience.
So can you define what plant medicine is just a little bit?
Yes. So I worked with ayahuasca, and ayahuasca is a plant from South America that has DMT, which is it's called the God molecule, which we all have in our bodies, and it's produced at birth and it's produced at death in our bodies. So it lives in this plant and it's activated within us when we drink it as a tea, and you have a spiritual experience. It opens you up to other realms. And it was my very first weekend, and my eating disorder left me.
How interesting.
Yeah. And I was replaced with this unconditional love.
Or unconditional love for yourself.
Yes. Yes. It was unconditional self-love, but it was also from God. Like I felt this like warm glow, this like light shining down on me. Mm-hmm. And the next day I looked in the mirror and I saw a different face. I looked in the mirror and I didn't recognize myself, but I saw a beautiful woman staring back at me. And I had never allowed myself to call myself or experience myself as beautiful. And I looked in the mirror and I was like, wow, who is that? That person's amazing. It's like, oh my God, that's me. And that was the beginning of me really healing this and learning how to integrate it.
Thank you for sharing that. And just the whole journey of what happens when we've been in a abusive or narcissistic relationship, what is, whatever your age is, how you interpret that. And then how it creates new belief systems and, in your case, a lot of major physical impacts, right? With your whole health and the bulimia and that whole journey of finding out, but you kept going, and how you had one bottom and then a different bottom and then a different bottom until there was this whole new opening of who she is. You felt this love, this whole glowing love, you felt self-love, you could look in the mirror and finally say, I'm not ashamed of my body. Because even though you were an athlete and you were definitely in good shape, you could not still at that time look in the mirror and say, you look awesome.
Yeah, right? I could never have said that in the past. The self-hatred was deep and it was really, really dark. When you've got that going on in the background, how much can you really achieve in your life? Mm-hmm. I was at conflict with myself without really recognizing that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really an amazing journey. And I'm so glad you kept going. Some people give up. And I hope whoever's listening now that whether they're going through anorexia or bulimia or whatever it is, overeating or over drinking or over anything, right? I call it the over addiction, right? Because being overworking is that there's just all these unresolved beliefs, feelings that have not been addressed before. Every episode, I offer a mini masterclass on the 11 Freedom Fulfillment Pillars. You can get the guidebook to all 11 Freedom Fulfillment Pillars right now. Simply go to vulnerabletovaluable.com and hit the subscribe button to get your copy. The only way to move forward and have an impact in your life is to get awareness of where you're at and discover what's holding you back. Following the 11 pillars, I was then able to develop strategies to create my business, become an international award-winning entrepreneur, speaker, and author, find the love of my life. And I use these pillars every day to create a fulfilled life. These are the same ones that I use with my clients. And now they are yours free. Go to vulnerabletovaluable.com and subscribe. And we're back with Toby Geis, Master NLP Practitioner and Reiki Master. So what are now some of your self-care strategies that you could share with our listener that you do to take care of yourself?
Great question. Well, I now prioritize my self-care over almost everything because I realize now that I can't really give to the world if I don't take care of myself first. And I used to be so resistant to self-care when I was in my bulimia. I'm like, oh, I don't have time for that. But now it's like, absolutely. So I meditate daily. Even 15 minutes is probably the minimum, or 10 minutes is probably the minimum if I have a quick day if I have a lot going on that day. My sleep is very important. You know, a good self-care practice is if I am not feeling up to socializing, if I'm not feeling up to whatever is happening on my calendar that is not imperative, I will cancel it. And before I would, if something was in my calendar, I was there come hell or high water. It didn't matter because, you know, I had to be in integrity. But I realize integrity means wholeness. Mm. And if I'm not up to going to somebody's, I actually just did it today. Somebody invited me to their birthday party, but it's like a 45 minute drive and I've got too much going on. And that did not feel very loving to myself. So being able to make those kind of decisions, it's like, no, that's going to throw off my whole day, my sleep schedule. I've got too much going on. That's going to stress me out for tomorrow. No, it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's a piece, is being flexible with myself and giving myself the time and space. I do, like, I get monthly massages, sometimes more than monthly. I do energy work, epi-energetics. Mm-hmm. I see the chiropractor twice a month, not because there's actually anything wrong with my back, but because that is my form of medicine and care, as well as acupuncture. So those are some things that I personally really love that I'm not giving up. I'm absolutely not giving up. Because that is medicine to me. And I think the biggest self-care I do now is listening to myself. I've learned to, and this is actually something I teach my clients, is how to listen within and listen to my body. And what does my body need? Why am I feeling off? What's the root cause of that? Is there an emotion that's underlying that I'm not expressing? And really allow myself to feel my emotions and to be with my emotions and to express them. That is self-care. You know, self-care isn't always like a pedicure or a massage. Right, self-care is, you know, it starts at a way lower level than that. Self-care is acknowledging myself and being okay with who I am right now in this moment. Even if I'm having a really bad day and I'm in a bad mood, that's okay. Maybe I just need to feel that so that it can pass, because so many times we're so uncomfortable with our emotions, or we're not taught in society how to deal with our emotions, that we stuff them. You know, whether it's with food or alcohol or drugs or porn, or maybe sometimes other people can be, you know, our addiction, or it's too much internet or TV, whatever it is. So many of us don't know how to be with that emotion, and we stuff it. And so self-care is actually, I'm having a feeling, I'm going to sit with it and allow myself to be with it. I'm going to feel it. I'm going to express it so that it can release, because emotions are meant to run their course. They're not meant to live in our bodies. I mean, as humans, we all have the same feelings. So shouldn't that inform us that, it's like part of the human experience? Like it's natural to have emotions. But somewhere along the line, we were taught that that was bad. But expressing your emotions is like the number one self-care.
What Toby and I are talking about is knowing about that, identifying the feeling and feeling it. There's another step, feel the discomfort of that. Mm-hmm. And that's what people need to practice. And like, I think your work and my work is going to help others do that. Go ahead, go for it.
That is something that can really help, you know, as we're having this discussion about like how to, what to do with the emotions, right? It's not about.
How can our listener find out more about you and the work that you do and something you might want to offer to them?
Yes. Well, I'll start with my gift for your listeners. And I've recorded a Ho'oponopono meditation. And many have probably heard this term or heard of the prayer Ho'oponopono. And it's actually a process. And I've recorded it as a meditation. Ho'oponopono means to, ho'o means to make, and pono means right. So to make right with self, to make right with others, to make right with God. And it is a healing technique. Ultimately, it's about self-forgiveness. So if you're feeling resentment or hatred towards somebody in your present or your past, it's only hurting you. We've heard this. Resentment is like drinking poison to spite the other person. So this Ho'oponopono meditation is a very healing practice. So I'm offering this to the listeners.
That's great. That's just absolutely great. And what's the link to that? Or it'll be in the show notes for sure.
Yes. It's my name, tobygeist.com/forgive.
Beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Toby, for everything. Being vulnerable and showing how through your journey, you became valuable to yourself, right? You learned that you are worthy, that you are lovable, and you always were. It was just your own self-discovery of that. And now you've given that gift to everybody who's listening to you. And I want to just end with, what does love is kind mean to you?
Ah, beautiful. Love is all there is. Love is all there is. And love is kind. There's really no separation between those two words. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, I think about what you do and I think about somebody interpreting love as mean or negative energy. Like, oh, that's just tough love. Well, that's not love. I don't think that's love. Love is one of the highest vibrations. Love is kind. Love is compassionate. Love feels uplifting. It raises our vibration. It expands our heart. It opens us up. Love is comfort. You know, it is comforting and it's expansive.
Yeah. Thank you. That was beautiful. Thank you for your beautiful energy and sharing all your wisdom and experience. It's been fabulous. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for the opportunity, Rosie.
That's it for today's episode. Head on over to vulnerabletovaluable.com and subscribe to the show. When you subscribe, you'll instantly get a special ebook. And when you subscribe to the show and post a review to iTunes, you'll be entered into a drawing to win a free consult with me. Plus, your subscribing will help our mission to inspire 100 million women worldwide to heal and move forward from their abusive relationships. That's vulnerabletovaluable.com, the podcast that guides you to reclaim your voice, value, confidence, and courage.